Gonna rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. Makingascene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
I'll throw a party tonight. And the band will play a lot of rock and roll. I'll send an
fallen, the price that they pay. We are bonded in freedom, united we stand. We'll fight for the rights of every man. We're a star country. Other countries try to bring us down. When disaster strikes them, it's us they come around. We're a star country. Hard at work and hard at play, we honor the fallen, the price that they paid. We are bonded in freedom, united we stand. We'll fight for the rights of every man. We're a star country. Stand up, America, star. Be proud, America, star. That's you and me. Star. Reach out, America, star. Be strong, America, star. So the world can see. Star. Stand up, America, star. Be proud, America, star. We're a star country. Star.
That was Eric Wilson Adams from his brand new release, and we got Eric Adams on the line right now. Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Hey, Richard. Good afternoon. Doing just fine here in northern Texas.
All right. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always like to start by giving our fans this opportunity to get to know who you are, not only as an artist, but also as a person. And the best way to do that is through your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Eric Wilson Adams.
Okay, I'll try to not make it too long of a story, but my first experience with a rock band was actually the Beatles.
Okay.
1965, they played in Atlanta. I was 13 years old. And after that, my dad was in the military, so we moved and lived in South Dakota, where in about seventh grade, I and several other young lads had a garage band. We practiced and practiced, and then we started playing some school gigs, and as we got a little older, we were playing some bar gigs and proms and outdoor concerts, that kind of a thing. The band was called Cocoon, from South Dakota. And we sort of broke up, like most bands do, for a few years until we got into our 40s. We started doing reunion gigs at various places where we used to play. And then lo and behold, in 2018, we were invited and asked to be inducted to the South Dakota Rock Hall of Fame, which was a real honor and a lot of fun. It was only before that, around 2002, when I was about 50, I started composing, if you will, writing some of my own tunes, which is a little odd because I don't really write music, and I was just, I'm the lead singer. I did a lot of melodies in my head, but I learned to bang on the keyboard a little bit, so I'm what you would call a chord player, and I do just enough, Richard, to get my songs through and then let the real musicians take over and add their talent. And then about 2017, I moved to Texas, where I started playing a little bit of some country blues I started putting together, which, by the way, I had done a couple of those too when I was 50, but that's grown more since I've moved to Texas. And that's kind of the background to
okay.
Eric Wilson Adams.
Now, you had mentioned, you know, the Beatles as being an early influence when you hit your teenage years, you know, and I
yes.
remember, you know, when the Beatles came in, and it was a big influence on myself. But I also remember when I was like around, I got to be 7 years old. Yeah, I had my parents' phonograph, and my mother had the box of 45s, and I found this record, Bobby Darin's Distant Shores, and I put that on.
Oh, boy.
And I must have played the grooves off of that record. And to me, that was kind of my musical awakening. I kind of realized the power that music had to transcend you to a different place. What is your earliest recollection of that moment where music really touched you for the first time?
Well, I have no problem answering that question. Both my parents were very musically minded. Mother had a beautiful voice. Dad couldn't sing a note on key if he tried, but he really loved music. So I grew up listening to the music they liked and enjoyed. The first, I said the first concert was the Beatles, but before that even, at a few years younger, we went to an officers' club. I think I was in second, third grade. And the original Ink Spots were playing. And that did move me. And I've got a couple of the original 45s, and I still listen to some of their tunes. And, so I guess that was the real beginning, and living with my parents and that kind of music all the time in the house, it just inbred in me.
Nice. Now, let's talk a little bit about the new release. You know, every release has a story. There is a reason for its existence, whether it's a momentary thought or you overhear something and it sparks the beginning. What is the story behind this release?
Losing Ground is the title, and there's a song also called Losing Ground. Some of these songs accumulated with me over the years. They just weren't written or produced in the last couple of years. One of them or two go back as early as 30 years ago. But once I moving to Texas was a huge move for me, physically and emotionally. All my family, my four children, still live up north in the Minnesota and the Dakota areas. Mm-hmm. So the tracks on Losing Ground really are a conglomerate of a lot of my life experiences, both in love and in sadness. And that's pretty much the short background of that.
Okay. Now, is there any particular track that you find really resonates with you personally as opposed to some of the others? Is there that one track that really connects with you as a person?
Well, yes. It's a toss on a few, but there is one called I Have Lived, which is track number two, runs a little over 3 minutes. I don't even have a video
for
that.
Chariot!
We had a little interruption there.
Yeah.
But I Have Lived is one, and then the next two, I would say Losing Ground, the number one song on there, and then number five, my most favorite of my love songs, Says She Loves Me Just the Same, which is kind of a country blues tune.
Okay.
If that answers your question on that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Now, let's talk a little bit about what you want your fan base to get out of this release. What do you want them to walk away with after they listen to it?
Well, I think I mentioned somewhere on one of these promotional sheets here is that my goal is to simply hope that as many people that can listen to it do, to bring a smile to people and entertain them. I'm of the age now that that's very important to me, that people are find some enjoyment in it. This is not a monetary thing for me. If it was, I'd be broke, but you know how it goes in the music business. But yeah, really, when somebody says they've heard my song or a few of these or they really enjoy this CD, that makes me happy that they took the time and actually found some enjoyment in it.
Okay. Now, let's talk about you as a songwriter. When you sit down to begin that process and you're sitting in front of that blank page, what is that mechanism or that thing that kind of taps you into your muse? I know you said that writing did not come until later on in your lifetime, but you know, everybody has that little process that they use to kind of get things flowing. What is your process?
Well, I'll get a melody in my head, and then if I like the melody, I think it may be somewhat unique. If not unique, I make sure that it's not a total copy. So, you know, sometimes you get a melody in your head and you go, oh, that's a Stevie Ray Vaughan song. You know, forget it. But I get the melody in my head, and I'll sit down at the keyboard and figure out the chords for it, and all of a sudden, some lyrics will come to me, probably because of the mood of the song itself will dictate what the lyrics or what the song will be about. And so as I do that, I'll write the lyrics down and the particular chords down to it. I will also take my cell phone. Even before the keyboard, I'll sometimes take the cell phone and hum a song into it with some fake lyrics just to, so I kind of know where I think I'm going with it. And trust me, Richard, nobody would want to hear those cell phone versions. But that's pretty much the way I do it. And then once I've completed it and then rehearse it, then I'll go to a studio with it.
Okay. Now, you know, a lot of writers struggle with when is a song done? You know, when you put the pen down. And, you know, I always look at songwriting almost like raising a teenager. You know, you spend a lot of time, you know, massaging and getting it just right and getting the lyrics right and the melody right and everything just right. But then eventually you have to give it the keys and let it go experience life. Or with a song, you have to give it to the band, you give it to the producer, you take it out on the road, and it evolves. What is your quantifier? What do you like to do to determine when a song is ready to move to that next phase of its life?
Yeah, when I feel really comfortable with each of the lyrics and each verse, and then the bridge, when I'm really comfortable with it, and I feel like I'm done making any changes, that the words fit, I feel I can't make it any better, that's when I know it's done and completed. If I don't complete a song, it's just because it's just not working. But once I complete one, then I'm ready to call the studio fellas and let's get started.
Okay. Now, what, you know, you had mentioned that you use the cell phone to kind of capture those ideas. And, you know, there's a lot of technology that has come our way that really has made our lives a lot easier, especially in writing. What are some of the tools you have found to be indispensable to you as a songwriter?
Well, of course, the instrument itself, the cell phone is, as I've already mentioned, sometimes it's the video itself. I'll put a video on as I'm recording or working through a song. Then I can look back at it, also see it, how does it sound, maybe give me an idea for a video. Some of my songs, I've put videos together. A couple of my songs, somebody else put videos together. So those are some of the technologies that that I use.
Okay. Now, once you have a song written, that's kind of half the battle. The other half is taking it into the studio and creating its sonic signature, its vibe, its groove. And every artist has their way of working in that environment to capture the sound that not only identifies them as an artist, but also helps bring the song to life. What is your process when you get into that environment that helps you capture the sound you're looking for?
Oh, boy. For me, my first step is I go into a gentleman's home studio, and his name is Bill Lunger. He's an audio technician by hobby and National Guardsman by trade. But Bill will have me sit down and first play out the keyboard. I can sing to it while I'm playing, but he's really not recording my voice yet. We'll lay down the track for the keyboard, the song itself, and then I go into the next little room with the microphone, and I will sing to the song.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the first step for us. He gets all done with it, wraps it up, puts it together, and then I have a genius producer in near Minneapolis, Trevor Nelson, who he really is a musical genius, and he's worked on Broadway and all kinds of stuff. But I was fortunate to run into him one day, and he'll take the tracks that Bill produced, put it together, and we'll have I have a few musicians, friends of mine, that will lay down the instrumentals. And also, Trevor, in this day and age, can add instruments, I guess you would call it, from AI, but however he does that, I really don't know. But and then he sends it to me, and he goes, "What do you think?" And most of the time I go, "It's perfect. What am I going to do to change it? You guys are the geniuses." Just once in a great while, I'll go, "You know that part right there? We need to do this, or I think we should do that," and we'll make the changes, and I have a new song.
Okay. All right. Now, tell me a little bit more. I mean, now, you did all of the parts, you know, the piano and the vocals. Do you know who played on any of the others, or is he using all virtual instruments?
Well, a lot of it is at times is virtual. Otherwise, I have some old, younger than I am, friends, Lyle Barron on drums, and Jim Gentleman on a guitar, has played on a CD of mine before, and Tom Barnes on bass, and his brother Mike Barnes also plays guitar, and those are fellows that I've been together with since the seventh grade, which doesn't happen too often, I imagine. But yeah, Lyle and I, the drummer, have been together since seventh grade.
Okay.
All right. And we live totally apart. He lives somewhere in Iowa. One of the guys lives in California.
Yeah, so it was just kind of a countrywide affair.
I guess, Richard, you could call it that, yeah.
All right.
That's a good idea.
Now, once you get it recorded, you have to now get it out to, you know, radio and press and create the buzz. And you're working with Frank Rozak from Frank Rozak Promotions. Tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Yeah, it's a new relationship, and I'm going to probably be wrong on this, but I think he and I now, I'm going to say 3 months. It's just a real new relationship. He does an excellent job of what he does, is promoting and putting the CDs out into hands of DJs and producers, people that listen to it, people, magazine people like yourself that decide, hey, here's a song. And I'm sure there's been a number of them go, it doesn't fit for us. But that's so, yeah, Frank does an excellent job and has thus far. Prior to him, after being inducted to the South Dakota Rock Hall of Fame, just by happenstance, one of the men there doing the MC work is a radio DJ, longtime radio DJ himself, out of Slayton, Minnesota, called K-Joe, K-J-O-E, FM Country. And Myron listened to a few of my songs and said, hey, we're gonna play this one and that one. So it's been 2 years now, and I think K-Joe Country has got 7 of my songs on rotation. Some with the country hint, of course, and others, a couple that are more blues-orientated. But so that's how my radio, I waited this long, and I never really chased it before. It was just in the last couple of years, I thought, well, if some radio stations will play it, I'd like to make some people happy by listening to it.
Okay. Now, let's talk about some of the topics that have been kind of at the forefront of the music industry as of late.
All right.
One of them is artificial intelligence.
Right.
Now, a lot of musicians fear it. They, you know, they look at it with this unbelievable trepidation that it's going to, you know, ruin their lives, ruin music, all of that, you know. And you and I, you know, we had mentioned earlier before the interview, we're of the same age. And we remember,
yes,
you know, things like, you know, when the drum machine came in and when MIDI first came in. And, you know, and, you know, we all know that the music industry was running around with their hair on fire over those technologies. And the same,
yes,
arguments were being made that it was going to make music metronomic and you're going to take jobs from musicians and, you know, all of that jazz. And, of course, none of that came to pass. Those technologies became tools in the hands of creative people. And if it wasn't for those technologies, we wouldn't have, you know, the, you know, hip-hop and the EMO, EDO and all of the, you know, electronic music and all of that would never have evolved.
Right,
from
good
it.
Point.
You know, so, you know, technology is not a bad thing. And of
no.
course, you know, back in the 70s, it was abused. I mean, let's face it, you know, there was some real schlocky music coming out of the
yeah.
disco realm. But AI is, you know, to me, I look at it with in three categories. You've got the creative end, you've got the production end, and then you have the marketing end. You know, on the creative end, I look at it as more of a creativity catalyst. You know, as a songwriter, we're always listening or overhearing conversations. If we hear a turn of phrase, we say, ooh, that would be a good title, or that's a good idea for a song. And AI is like having a conversation with a larger brain, with a lot more experience and data to draw from. So you could take a phrase and throw it into AI and say, how many ways can you say this? And somewhere in there is an inspiration. So I look at it more as a catalyst, you know?
Yes.
On the production end, going into the studio, and in fact, I just wrote an article on this, how the DAWs, or the digital audio workstations, are starting to evolve into what they call the GAWs, which is generative audio workstations, where someone like you as a singer can sing into their, you know, recording studio software, and then
yeah.
ask the studio software to say, okay, I'm looking for a blues orientated groove behind this, and it will find the, you know, the beats per minute and then fill in the groove for you, you know, and give you starting points that you can now edit and move and manipulate the way you want. And it becomes an efficient tool, you know, an efficiency tool. The same
right.
thing with mastering and mixing. They give you like Ozone and Neutron and Nectar, give you tools to make the studio more efficient. But none of those are the real power. The real power of AI is the fact that it can analyze a huge amount of data and give us actionable items based on that data, and to achieve a specific goal. And I did an experiment where I took a song and I put it up on this site, Cyanite. It's cyanite.ai. And okay. It analyzes the sonic signature of the song, gives me a whole bunch of data points. And I took all those data points and I threw it into ChatGPT. And I said, based on this data, what is the best way to market this song to the largest potential fan base? And it spit out a complete marketing plan.
Wow.
You know, and then now you can even go to like Sora and create music videos just like you had a full production team in front of you. And all you got to do is say, okay, I want, you know, someone walking by a sunset in a desert with, you know, a coyote howling in the distance and yada, yada, yada. And it will give you that scene. And you can make these little scenes up through a storyboard and create a whole music video for literally less than what it would cost you for Starbucks that month. You know? So,
yes.
To me, that is the real power behind AI. What do you think its influence is going to be on the industry going forward?
Well, you're right. There's a lot of power there. And before I make too many comments, I will be the first to admit that I am not an AI expert. Learning more knowledge about it all the time. But I don't have any fears of it. My advice to people using it is that whatever you do with your end result, whatever comes out, is you better be able to do that live. Because if you produce something that really isn't you, and or the instrumentation behind it is something that your guys and gals can't produce, then I think you're wasting your time. But I see the advantages to it, as well as where we can and have added some instruments to it where we didn't have the players and we didn't have to bring in somebody at $125 an hour or something. So we could say, well, we need to put a cello in here for some reason. So let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done that on some songs. But I think it's a powerful tool. And like any powerful tool, if it's used honestly, and go for it.
Yeah, and like you said, it's, and of course we all know that it's going to get abused initially. You know, there are AI releases coming out, but I see the public, you know, going past the novelty eventually and saying, okay, that's just not right. You know, it doesn't connect. You know, like the old Milli Vanilli syndrome, you know?
Yeah, funny you should mention them, because when you were talking earlier, they kind of popped in my head and thought, yeah, that didn't work so well.
Yeah, that didn't work so well, yeah. You know, the consumer, they get savvy pretty quick, and they still want authenticity.
Yeah.
They still want to feel that emotional connection to the music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's why I say be honest about it, and people will know when you're honest.
Yeah. Now, the other big topic I get into conversations about is, of course, we all know that the consumer has embraced streaming as a way to consume music. And the revenue from streaming, no matter how you slice it, has evolved to a point where it's not sustainable as a business model for the music industry. We cannot continue to not pay artists for their intellectual property. Spotify instituted this policy where they won't pay any stream that has, or any track that has less than 1,000 streams a year. which is putting, you know, millions of dollars into their bottom line and virtually in the pockets of the big record companies, and taking it away from the micro economy of the independent artists. And, you know, and it's just not right. And, you know, Billboard magazine actually had an article where they stated that of all the money that the music industry makes, only 12% ends up in the artist's hands. What do you think needs to happen to right that ship, to change that dynamic?
Oh, boy. That's almost out of my league, but because I really don't know what can be done. You know, I belong to BMI and Sound Exchange, and you got to go through a lot of hoops before you get your dime and nickel. But so, yeah, it's an excellent question, but I don't know that I've got much of an answer for it.
Well, you know, I've been looking into this whole technology of Web3. And there is this movement towards a decentralized music industry. And what that really means is that it's an industry that is based on the fact that it's a direct relationship between the fan and the artist, where there's no middleman structure in between. To give you an example, there's a streaming service called Audius.co.
Okay.
And it's built on the blockchain, which is that streaming that technology that cryptocurrency uses to secure itself. So it's very secure. But one of the big advantages of the blockchain is that it does not have a centralized system. It's a decentralized system. In other words, no company, no corporation, no board of directors can own it. There's no profit model. It is It's owned by the artist who puts up his content, and by the fans who pay for the service. They're in control of the streaming service. And the other thing is that it's 100% transparent. Give an example. You can't get an accountant, walk into the Spotify office and say, I want to audit your books to see if I'm getting my 10 cents. You know, they'll throw you out and laugh at you all the way out the door. With this new kind of streaming service, you can go into that block at any time and you can see how many streams you had, how much money you made, anytime you want. In fact, you can embed that block with what they call a smart contract, which, let's say you have a collaborator. You can set it up. You know, you can set it up where he gets 50%, you get 50%. As soon as your music is accessed, automatically generates payments to you and your collaborator. You can also now, you can sell shares in your songs. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah, based on your streaming or your even your publishing royalties. And again, that can be embedded into this smart contract in the block. So every time someone accesses your song, your investors get paid, your collaborator gets paid, and you get paid immediately. No waiting 90 days, none of that stuff. It just, boom, out to your wallets. And again, anytime you want, you can look in that block, see how much you made, how much your investors made, how much your collaborator made. And this is just some of the technology that's available to create this brand new music industry ecosystem that we as independent artists have the power to introduce to our fan base. What do you think of that as a potential?
Well, I think it's outstanding, and it's certainly the way to go. If I knew more about it, or as I learn more about it now that you've brought a lot of it up, I'll really investigate it. You don't by any chance have some of that in your book, Breaking Chains?
Oh, yeah. That's that's what it's about. is how.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. I know. I'll order one when we hang up.
Okay. Well, thank you.
But yeah, I think anything that makes it easier and more economical and profitable. I spent 40 some years in a business, and profitability was the name of the game. Mm-hmm. You had to find ways to do that.
Yeah, creating revenue streams. That's the key for any independent artist, is, you know, creating those revenue streams.
Now, as it is with any business, yes.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about you and what you're doing. You know, ever since the pandemic hit, creating content has been really important to the independent artist. I mean, it's how we stay connected to our fans during the pandemic. And now the fans have really acclimated themselves to that raw kind of content that we can put up on social media. And they really want to get to know artists today. What are some of the things that you're doing on, you know, creating content and using social media to get the word out on this new release?
Well, where do I start? I'd probably be mixed up a little bit here, but I've been a long term. I'm on Facebook. I have a number of friends and people I don't even know that are, you know, so-called friends. And I will put a song on there once in a while if I have CDs available. By the way, seems like more and more people are coming back to CDs, which is kind of interesting. But I'll put my music there. There's other avenues like SoundCloud, and where you can put your tunes and get a little action there. Some of your friends will help promote it by passing it along, which really brings it all down to networking. It's, if you don't look at your music as a business, you're not going to go too far with it, because networking is definitely a big key. Meet people, introduce yourself to them, ask them, you know, what kind of music they're interested in. Maybe give them one of your tunes. But that's the key right there. I've in this business and in any business is networking. Use your inspirations, my inspirations, since I've been fortunate enough and blessed enough to live this long. I have a huge book to dive into of life, love, and pain, and work as my inspirations to put down and pin some music. And in hopes that some of those things that I put down in those inspirations are what people find entertaining, because they also have experienced many of the same kind of life experiences, and we have that in common.
Okay. Now, I really appreciate you coming on the show and speaking with me, and it's been a real pleasure having you on. And I'm going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love it. Just turn it up loud. Screw the neighbors.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for your time and your questions.
What was that song, that beautiful song we made love to? Well, play it again. I've got a new yin for that love tune. We seemed to blend right on in. It was harmony from the start. Let the music play while we do our part. Playing that love song with you, that's all I wanna do. Let the world pass us by tonight. And when that song comes to an end, we'll just play it over again. There's nothing I'd rather do. What was that song? That and song we made love to. Well, apparently they played it for us to groove to. We seem to blend, don't let it end. We got forever on our side. Let the music play while our two hearts glide. Playing that love song with you, that's all. Let the world pass us by tonight. And when that song comes to an end, we'll just play it over again. There's nothing I'd rather do. No, no, there's nothing I'd rather do. In the mud or the snow, there's nothing I'd rather do. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
says she loves me just the same. Says she loves me just the same.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna rock these shades. Gonna scream my name. Make it shout now, honey. Gonna make